Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Syntex versus Mutual.
May it please the court, Ms. Navarro-Klein will present arguments for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Will Texas courts be the first in the country to void contractual agreements to waive implied warranties in the sale of a new home? This court in Robichaux and some 20 courts in other states around the country have taken the opposite approach, allowing waiver of these same implied warranties so long as the contractual language of the waiver is sufficiently clear. Why has this approach been the overwhelming one chosen? For one thing, a buyer of a new home benefits from a web of regulatory, statutory, and common law protections. Construction of a new home is subject to building codes, and builders must submit to inspections by regulatory agencies in order to obtain necessary permits. Contract for the construction of a new home incorporates written plans and specifications. And after the sale, a buyer has available to him a variety of statutory and common law remedies.
What are those remedies?
Well, for example, Your Honor, in this case, the plaintiffs have pleaded claims for negligence, breach of express warranties, DTPA laundry list violations, real estate fraud under Section 27 of the Texas Business and Commerce Code. There is also recognized a covenant.
And does the builder in this case in any way dispute that all of those remedies are available to the consumer in this case?
Well, Your Honor, those claims are still pending in the trial court, and the builder has denied.
My question is the builder also claiming that those remedies are not available to the consumer?
In this particular case, the builder denies that there were any construction defects.
Well, and that's not my question. I'm not asking you to go to the underlying liability. Was there a defect or not? My question to you is the builder denying whether or not this long list of remedies that you're talking about, is the builder denying that at law those remedies are available?
Those issues, of course, have not been presented in this case, Here, for purposes of this argument, we do not deny that a consumer, a buyer of a new home, may have a claim under the DTPA laundry list.
Let me get to the bottom of it. You're asking us to validate this waiver and recognize it under the law. And my question to you basically is, if we were to say that this waiver is valid, are we then foreclosing at law other remedies, either because of other terms of the contract, because of usual practice in the industry, or are you saying that there are other remedies available that the building industry acknowledges are available to consumers in order for a consumer with this type of alleged defect to pursue a remedy from the builder?
I understand your question.
Before you ask us to wipe it out, tell us what the consequences are.
Yes, there are other remedies available.
Okay, and what are those remedies?
Well, for example, in this case, there is an express warranty, and there is a remedy under the express warranty.
And what is the express warranty?
The express warranty, the terms of the express warranty are not in the record before you, but they are an express warranty that is insured, that provides a one-year warranty covering any defect, a two-year systems warranty, I believe, and a 10-year warranty on major structural defects.
There's so many protections. What's wrong with it? And you have to do so much litigation anyway. What's wrong with an implied warranty?
Well, Your Honor, the problem is that an implied warranty is vague. It is ill-defined. An express warranty is easy to understand. It's easy to enforce, and it's easy to insure. For a builder to be able to price a home, the builder needs to have an understanding of what its obligations and responsibilities are. And likewise, a consumer ought to have a clear understanding of what if his rights and responsibilities are. So the advantage to both consumers and builders is that at the time a home is sold, there is a clear understanding of the rights and responsibilities of the builder and the rights and responsibilities of the consumer, and the price reflects that.
Well, if the roof on the house leaks, what difference does it make as to whether or not the consumer sues the builder for breach of an implied warranty or for breach of an express warranty?
Well, because the express warranty can, in that particular instance, it may not make a difference, but an express warranty can define precisely what the responsibilities of the builder are in ways that an implied warranty does not. The other difference it makes is that the vagueness of the implied warranty leads to increased litigation, increased unpredictability, and increased cost.
See, the point I'm having difficulty with is I'm not quite sure why a roof that leaks creates, why there's such vagueness associated with that. In other words, my concern about this and my questions are directed to you is what the consequence of invalidating this is. You've talked about to the building industry. They say it's vague. But if the roof is leaky, isn't the builder under some theory going to have to fix it or pay damages? I mean, so that it doesn't matter to the builder? I mean, I'm trying to get both sides of the equation and the consequence in the building industry to consumers and the industry of invalidating this when you do have building defects in a residential property.
I understand. A home, though, is composed of thousands of component parts, and there may be dozens of contractors and subcontractors who are working on those. And while it may be easy to point to a leaky roof, there are lots of other things that are much less easily defined and understood if you're just talking about a vague implied warranty. The other reason it makes a difference is that this is a contract. And when the builder prices that home and sells that home under that contract, the builder is basing that price on what his rights and on what his responsibilities are, and if they are clearly defined and can be insured, then the builder is able to compete in the marketplace efficiently and price that home.
Let me ask you, rather than talking about what should or should not be, don't we have to start with where we are? I mean, aren't we bound by Melody Homes?
Your Honor, Melody Home did not decide the issue that is presented here.
Well, if you're trying to distinguish it on the basis of the implied warranty, can you give me a reasoned distinction? I haven't seen that in the briefing, and I'd like to hear why there should be a distinction between the two types of warranties.
I understand. There are two answers to that. The first is that the kinds of things that the Melody Home opinion talks about, and it was directed solely at the repair services warranty it created. The kinds of things
that... Wasn't that a prefabricated home?
It was a prefabricated home.
So, again, I want a reasoned distinction.
I understand. I understand your question. If you look at the Melody Home opinion, one thing they said was, typically in a repair services contract, the amount of in dispute is not going to be enough to justify common law remedies. That's not the case in the sale of a new home. Another distinguishing factor. Do you understand?
Why would that not be the case in the sale of a new home? You just said there are myriad problems that could go wrong. One of the myriad problems is not a big ticket item.
Well, Your Honor, typically the sale of a home is a large and important transaction, and a consumer is going to be, has available to him, this is another distinction between a new home sale and a repair services transaction. When you buy a new home, you have available to you information by which you can compare builders, you can compare contract terms, you can choose to buy a new home or not. In the repair services transaction, and the Melody Home case is a good example, the consumers there really had no other choice than to go back to the manufacturer of that home for repair service.
But the case wasn't limited to those facts.
Well, Your Honor, the non-waiver dicta, and again, that non-waiver language is dicta in that case that is not binding on this court. because that waiver issue was not presented in Melody Home. But the dicta in that case was directed solely to the repair services warranty.
And well, okay, let me get back to my principal distinction. You said you had 2 points and you were on one. Let me get you back.
Well, the other problem with it is if you start expanding Melody Home to other implied warranties, what Melody Home says essentially is the justification for implying this warranty is the same justification that gives rise to this non-waiver discussion. If you expand that and apply it to other implied warranties, there is no end to that.
Well, how do you respond to their claim that a consumer has more protection for a faulty toaster than for a new home?
That's just not true, Your Honor, and it's not true because there is this web, as I spoke of statutory, regulatory, and common law protections that are available to a new home buyer.
But did the legislature, in considering RCRA, consider the state of the law in Melody Home and decline to include a waiver provision in the statute?
No, Your Honor, that is not an accurate reflection of the legislative history. First of all, the legislative history behind RCRA is not relevant here because we're not construing a statute. Legislatures don't make common law. But even reading the legislative history, there is nothing in that history or in the statute that indicates an intent to prohibit a contractual agreement that is clear and that is clearly enforceable under this court's decision in Robichaud. There's nothing in that legislative history that indicates an intent to prohibit these kinds of contracts.
Let me ask you about this kind of contract. There seems to be a quid pro quo here, and that is that in exchange for waiving the implied warranties, you're going to give an express warranty. Is it your position that that quid pro quo is necessary? That the waiver of the implied warranties is valid so long as, and only so long as, it is accompanied by an express warranty?
That's not our position, because if you look at Robichaud, Robichaud clearly allows a consumer to knowingly buy a home without a warranty. But the facts of this case are, as you pointed out, that this was a contractual bargain. And it's our position that this court, it's not the role of this court to say that a consumer is better off paying more for a vague implied warranty than choosing to pay less for a detailed, understandable, and insured express warranty.
So your position is that the inclusion of the express warranty is immaterial to the result that should be reached in this case?
It's immaterial to the legal issue that's presented and to the decision in Robichaud and other courts that have considered this same legal issue. I think it is relevant in terms of understanding the kind of contract that we're looking at here.
How is it Syntec's practice to sit down with a prospective homeowner with its standard form contract and renegotiate the terms of the contract?
Your Honor, this particular term is essential to this contract and it is essential to the provision of express warranties, and it is standard in Syntex's practice. Now, there may be cases in which it is negotiated, but it's not standard. The standard practice is to provide the express warranty in exchange for the implied warranty.
And is the standard practice for a prospective Syntex home buyer to actually sign off on a standard form contract with the only particular items for that contract being priced in the particular piece of property? Otherwise, the contracts are not negotiated. They are a standard form contract that's a take it or leave it deal for the consumer. I'm trying to get the. My point is that the Court of Appeals talks about this as being an adhesion contract, and I want to understand the context in which this type of contract is typically agreed upon between Syntex and a prospective home buyer. Are they negotiated in any way, or are they a standard form contract that Syntex says, if you want to buy our house, here's what you sign?
The use of the term adhesion contract by the Court of Appeals is not supported by any evidence in this record. Standard contracts are used because the cost, from an economic perspective, the cost of negotiating every individual transaction is more than the benefit.
Okay, so the answer to the question is either not negotiated. Syntex gives the prospective buyer a standard form contract, and if they want to do the deal, this is what they sign. Otherwise, they go someplace else.
And I think that's an important point, that this is a voluntary transaction.
Is the answer to my question, yes, that's the way it works?
Yes, it is a standard form, and it's the standard practice to offer these terms and for the buyer to either voluntarily and knowingly accept them or to refuse to accept them.
Then is this a standard form contract used in the industry by other home builders as well?
The contracts vary. The contracts vary. There are some builders who use these type of contracts and some builders who don't.
How widely used is this contract? Do you know?
I don't know.
Any other questions?
How widely used is this particular waiver?
I don't know. I know that that a number of builders offer express warranties, and one reason for that and another protection for home buyers is that FHA lenders, for example, and other government lenders require the provision of express warranties.
Does this contract have other waivers of remedies contained in it besides the waiver of an implied warranty? You went down a laundry list.
Right.
Are there other provisions that waive other remedies that you say otherwise would be available under the law?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. And the other thing I wanted to say in answer to your earlier question is this particular provision of a contract, of this contract, is one that the buyers initialed in the margin separately to indicate their approval.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Joe Longley will present arguments for the respondent. He will be speaking for 20 minutes.
May it please the court. The point I want to make is that the exhibit that we've given the court, which is the exact waiver of warranty and disclaimer that's at issue in this case, is basically a poster child for a take-it-or-leave-it contract. And you've heard that admission here before the court this morning. That is what is at issue here is how do you protect consumers?
Let me ask you this question. Suppose I'm a consumer and I want to buy a new home. The builder says, I won't give you a warranty deed. I will only give you a quitclaim deed. Take it or leave it. Should we impose some sort of implied obligation in Texas law that you can't do that? You have to give some sort of title warranty?
No. I don't believe in that particular instance you should, but Texas has had a long history of protecting home buyers and homeowners ever since the days of our initial Constitution when we protected the rights to mortgage the homestead under a second mortgage or whatever. The other protections that were recognized in Humber versus Morgan, the protections that were legislated by the legislature in the Deceptive Trade Practices Act.
You say in your brief that Texas has led the nation in this particular area. How many followers have there been?
Well, I think there have been several followers.
You don't cite any other jurisdictions in your
brief? No, I didn't really have to because Texas does lead the nation.
Can you give me cases in other jurisdictions where they have said you cannot waive this implied warranty in a new home?
I did not research that, Justice Owen, because what Texas has done is in keeping with Texas policy to protect homeowners, as they have always done. What other states do is really not relevant here, because Texas, through its Constitution, has protected the homestead. Texas, through Humber versus Morton, has protected the right to have an implied warranty of good workmanship and habitability. Texas, through the Deceptive Trade Practices Act, has enacted anti-waiver provisions, which were followed in Melody Home.
Well, you bring up a good comment, and that is, aren't these folks protected by the DTPA?
They are, and a good point about that is...
And you can't waive it under the DTPA, can you?
Well, the latest waiver provision of the DTPA adopted Justice Heck's approach in Prudential versus Jefferson Associates, which is cited on page 18 of our brief. And that...
It's the court's approach, actually.
Well, it was the court's approach, but I think that you authored the opinion, and it was adopted by the court. And there, it was very, very clear that... take-it-or-leave-it contracts such as this were criticized as being just what they are, boilerplate, a disparate bargaining position between the parties, and that was something that had to be hashed out.
But even considering this language right here, isn't it true that the purchasers have protections under the DTPA? Don't you agree that this does not waive any DTPA claims?
It does not waive any DTPA claims, and it, but under RCRA, the DTPA does not apply unless something happens in the RCRA process that gets you over into the DTPA.
And don't you agree that any RCRA claims are not waived?
I do, but for a different purpose. The legislature rejected this very provision. Let me tell you
what. Hold on. But, so bottom line is, you agree that despite this waiver, that there are protections afforded to the purchaser and avenues available to the purchaser to pursue claims against the seller in case something goes wrong?
Not in the case of just a specific implied warranty.
Okay, so the only claim you have in this case is under implied warranty. You're not suing under any other claims.
They are, but they're not before this court.
Okay, so again, you are saying that you do have other claims.
There are other claims.
List them for me.
I believe counsel has listed those that have been severed from this case.
List them for me again, please.
Well, I believe there was DTPA claims, breach of contract claims, negligent claims, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. Woods was at the...
And none of those are waived by this, are they?
Not by this particular language, no.
Then why is it that you need the implied warranty?
Well, because the implied warranty, as the court said in Humber, sounds in tort and not in contract. And you can waive claims for contract if you're just suing under a contract.
But if you have negligence, if you have DTPA, if you have all these other things, why is it that you need the implied warranty?
Because RCRA preempts the field with regard to construction defects. And RCRA does not specifically in the statute say that you cannot waive these items. The way that you get to the non-waiver in RCRA is by what was rejected by the legislature in 1989. And it's listed in our brief. But
you're saying you don't want, you have to go through RCRA for all these other claims, but you don't want to have to go through RCRA with respect to implied warranties. Is that your position?
No. I'm saying that RCRA has preempted the field. This was a home builder's bill, as Senator Mofford stated. He was carrying a home builder's bill. And in the home builder's bill, when they tried to do exactly what they're trying to do before this court, the legislature rejected
it. I'm asking about Justice Abbott's question. I mean, why aren't your other remedies adequate? And your answer was RCRA, and I didn't understand that.
Well, because the other remedies do not necessarily cover implied warranties. Like with DTPA, you've got other things such as unconscionability or misrepresentation. You may not have those items. All you may have is just poor workmanship, but where there are no attendant misrepresentations.
Under DTPA provides for a warranty claim under it.
It does if you can get over under it, but as the court knows, under RCRA it says any particular conflicts or disputes between RCRA and the DTPA, RCRA applies.
I'm still unclear, Mr. Long.
This doesn't waive misrepresentation.
No, it does not waive misrepresentation, but if you have a case, in many cases, such as the case of Justice Gamage, where he testified at the RCRA hearings, he said that he didn't have misrepresentations with regard to his home. He just had poor workmanship. And he had no misrepresentation claim. And that's outlined in the...
Why wouldn't you have breach of contract then?
Well, you could have breach of contract, but you can also have waivers that, you know, as to your contractual remedies.
Mr. Long,
comes directly under contract.
Mr. Long, I would like to ask you the same question that I asked your opposing counsel, and that is, why do consumers need this particular cause of action? What protection does it provide to them such that public policy should void a waiver like this? That is not a protection that is not otherwise available to them under the law.
Because in many cases, the implied warranty of good and workmanlike manner and habitability is the only remedy available to
them. Would you give us an example of what a circumstance where the implied warranty would provide protection that is not otherwise available?
Well,
there's
been no attendant misrepresentations or representations made about the quality or of the goods or services.
Well, but let's say you have a leaky roof.
Right.
You don't have to have implied warranty for that. Can't you sue for breach of contract?
Well, if your contractual remedies have not been waived or otherwise done away with in some way.
Well, do these contracts typically waive tell us about these contracts. Does this contract waive contractual remedies so that you can't sue if your roof doesn't keep the rain out?
Well, I can't speak to any contract but what's before the court here. because I don't have any...
Well, tell us about this contract. I'm still having a hard time getting, I guess, an answer from anyone about why this implied warranty is necessary and why a homeowner doesn't get protection from the contract itself or other remedies available at law for any potential defects in workmanship that may exist in the home.
The answer is in what is in the express warranty that the consumer is getting in lieu of the implied warranties. And I believe it was you, Justice Hankinson, that asked a question about the leaky roof and how would that be covered under the express warranty. Under this specific express warranty that would be at issue in this case, there's a one-year application of an express warranty that does not cover any incidental or consequential damages. In other words, if you can get it in there in the first year, fix the leaky roof, they'll fix that, but they won't fix the floor, they won't fix the drapes, they won't fix any attendant incidental and consequential damages.
Okay, so the answer to the question then is that the express warranties are so limited.
Yes, ma'am.
That the consumer does not get full recovery of damages caused by the defect in the home. Is that what we're getting? Is that the crux of this?
That's absolutely what is at issue here, because in the legislature, and it's in the appendix to the brief, in fact, it's the petitioner's response brief, is that this was going to be a homeowner warranty retirement act. When they took Rekla over there, they had a waiver that was that was just like the Robichaud waiver. It didn't give an express warranty. It didn't do anything but waive all of the remedies.
But with all due respect, what you just told Justice Hankinson basically is that the homeowner here is going to be limited to the express warranty. And in fact, that's not true at all.
Well, I think it is true with regard to your remedies for workmanship.
Let's follow up on it. Let's suppose Justice Abbott bought a brand new home a year ago, and now he wants to sell it to me, and I want to buy it, but he says, I will only sell it to you as is. I expressly say no warranties whatsoever. What's wrong with that a year later? Why shouldn't I be able to, as a consumer, make the decision whether I'm going to buy this one-year-old home with some kind of warranty or not?
There's nothing wrong with it.
So why should we be more paternalistic or maternalistic, I guess, as the case may be, with regard to a new home than we would to a six-month-old home or a year-old home or a five-year-old home?
Well, because the legislature and this court has mandated that for new construction that there be a good and workmanlike manner imposed, just as a minimum, and habitability, that the home is habitable.
Where the legislature, you say they've mandated. I don't see a statute that says that.
Well, the DTPA has picked up the Humber versus Morton warranty.
But assuming we disagree with you, we're trying to decide, should there be an implied warranty? My question to you is, why should we treat a brand new home any differently than we treat a home that's 6 months old or a year old or 5 years old, where a consumer can clearly make the decision to buy it as is without any warranties?
Well, that's because Justice Abbott did not build the home.
But I, as a consumer, have that option. Should the court say, well, houses under 10 years of age all have implied warranties that can't be waived, or why should we limit it to just brand new homes?
Well, because the builder of the home is the one who has all the information. You, as the buyer, Justice Owen, you don't know whether the fireplace is faulty or whether there's been faulty workmanship.
If I buy a home that's a year old, I have a right to inspect, and then I can make the decision whether to buy the home and on what terms. Why shouldn't I have the same rights with respect to a one-year-old home that I would with respect to a new home? Why should the court get involved in the transaction is my question.
Well, the court shouldn't in that transaction because you're not buying it from the builder.
What if, in that scenario, the person who owned it for a year built the house?
Well, then if the person who built the house was selling the house with regard to without any waivers or without any as-is information, I think they would be liable for implied warranties. And if they had as-is provisions, then you would look to the bargaining position of the parties, as this court did in Prudential versus Jefferson Associates.
Why shouldn't, I would like to talk with you about another consequence of this. As I understand Syntex's argument, allowing this waiver to be validated in a contract and for express warranties instead to govern controls costs and prevents unanticipated costs from being fed into the construction process, and therefore keeps home costs down, protects the citizens. Do you agree with that? At least I understand that's part of what the argument that's being made, the predictability that's necessary to keep costs down. Do you agree with that argument?
No, I do not.
Why not?
Because ever since 1968, since the Humber warranties were recognized, since they were codified in the DTPA, since they were recognized by this court in Melody Homes, since they were recognized again by the legislature in RCLA in 89, since the legislature gave even more specific protections to homeowners in 1995 in the tort reform amendments, they have always mandated that the homeowner have these implied warranties and that they be available and that the builders stand behind it. Accountability is what the legislature is imposing.
Well,
accountability for one's work.
Okay, and I understand, and that's one public policy issue at play here. But there's another public policy consideration, and that is if you can bargain for an express warranty where costs can be predictable and you can build them more with more certainty into the price of the home, then home costs are lower. Is that a consequence, a positive consequence to Texas consumers of validating a waiver like this?
Well, I suppose in the context that you put it, it's much like if insurance companies didn't have to pay claims, they could lower premiums. Certainly. But as far as this is concerned, you're asking, they're asking this court.
I'm asking you to respond to the argument of the other side that using express warranties that are specific allows more predictability in the costs associated with building new homes in Texas, and therefore controls the cost for consumers, and that is a legitimate public policy reason for validating this type of warranty. And I'm asking you to respond to that argument.
My response is that it does not, and what it does is shift the burden from the person who has the most knowledge about the home to a homeowner warranty corporation that does not cover incidental and consequential damages, and that ultimately it serves up to be a detriment to consumers in Texas, which costs them much more money than is saved through whatever cost savings might be made through the so-called predictability, which is not on the record.
Let me ask you a question. We held in the Ritter Homes case that the implied warranty issue here is when a homeowner sells the home, that the new buyer gets the warranty. Now, how long does this implied warranty last? I mean, under your theory, I suppose, three or four buyers down the chain, there could never be a waiver of this implied warranty. So how many years does it carry forward, and through how many purchasers?
Well, I think that, you know, under the DTPA, if you can get over into the DTPA and show that there was poor workmanship to begin with, it goes from the date of discovery. It's only limited by the statute of limitations.
DTPA aside, just a straight-up suit on an implied warranty, how long does it last? Is it a home that's 10 years old, and my roof starts to leak, can I sue the original builder even though I'm the fifth homeowner?
If you could find out that the leak was caused by poor workmanship in the beginning.
And there's no way to waive that or put any kind of agreed contractual time limits on that.
Well, unless you give life to what they're asking you to do here that the legislature has rejected and that this court has rejected before.
Well, Mr. Longley, let me get back to this precedent thing that I'm hung up on. And why should we not limit Melody Home, as opposing counsel has urged us to, in light of these other remedies that are apparently out there now for the homeowner? I mean, would you agree that it's capable of limitation to the specific facts and situation presented?
Well, certainly I would agree that is one argument that can be made, just like Robichaud is. Robichaud, for instance, the parties agreed that you could waive these remedies. In this case, as presented to this court, the more basic question here is, can you waive them at all?
Well, when I asked for a principal distinction between the two different types of warranties, could we base such a principal distinction on the fact that now we have RCLA and now we have other statutes that provide relief to the homeowner and therefore we should limit Melody Home?
Well, I think that you could certainly limit Melody Homes or you could decide whatever you want to, but the legislature has weighed in now on three separate occasions, and I think to do that, they rejected the legislative overruling of Melody Homes.
But isn't that a double-edged sword? I mean, if we look at what the legislature's done, we could just as easily say the legislature has stepped in and provided remedies, and so we don't need this implied warranty anymore.
Well, and if you look at the remedies the legislature provided, they provided remedies without a waiver. And that's what happened in Breckland. And that's what happened again in the DTPA.
But you'd agree that we could still be true to our own precedent by limiting Melody Home.
I think you can do anything this court wants to do with any decision that you've ever had, because I think it's fairly common.
Well, no, I'm saying we wouldn't necessarily need to overrule it. We could just limit it to its specific facts.
You could limit it to the specific facts.
So you're not saying we would have to.
Just as Melody Home basically did Robichaud. You just said to the extent that it conflicts with this opinion, Robichaud's overruled.
Mr. Longley, I'm sure you're well aware that this court has been nervous about some of its precedent. Melody Holmes is occurring during that particular era. And Ms. Klein raised a question that I think rings pretty strongly when she began her argument with whether this court will be the first court in the country to avoid contractual waivers of implied warranties in the sale of a new home. Your argument is that this court already did so in Melody Homes, and as a result, you did not feel it was necessary to research what other states have done. If the research is, as Ms. Klein says, that no other state has created a common law principle that implied warranties cannot be waived as a matter of public policy, do you not find this court still out there at the point with no one else following?
No, I do not, because their distinction, Justice, because of the fact that the legislature came in and reaffirmed Melody Homes, and in Appendix 1 of our brief, the lobbyist for the Texas Builders Association said the Supreme Court decided Melody Homes versus Barnes, which did a lot of things to a lot of people. You need to know about Melody Home is that it created some doubt about whether or not you can still disclaim the implied warranties on construction. We think that maybe it meant to disallow those, or maybe it would disallow those in the next case. The legislature specifically considered whether or not you could waive warranties based upon the testimony of the lobbyist who was sponsoring the bill.
Assuming
and said we will not do that.
Assuming we were to disagree with your characterization or your interpretation of the legislative history, can you provide us with any cases that support you outside of Texas?
I think I can if the court would allow a submission. I think that we can show other cases that have certainly not allowed the waiver of implied warranties under certain circumstances. But the Texas protection for homeowners is unique. And they're asking you to do away with all those years of special protections we've given to homeowners, going back to our Constitution, basically, is where this basis comes from. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Is there any means for a consumer, a purchaser on a Centex contract, to recover incidental and consequential costs associated with building defects?
I don't know, Your Honor. Those issues are pending in the trial court, and they haven't been decided. But even if this were a limitation on damages, there are numerous examples where, both in the common law and the statutory law, limitations on damages associated with implied warranties have been allowed.
Well, I understand that. I'm still getting back to my consequence question that you and I started with. And he says now, in response to my question, that the reason why we need the implied warranty is it's the only way you can get the incidental and consequential damages associated with a building defect.
Is that true
or not? Would that be a consequence of our decision, if we go your way, that we would be eliminating the availability of incidental and consequential damages to homeowners?
No, not that I'm aware of, and not that anything in this record suggests.
Okay, well, how would a homeowner recover incidental and consequential damages on a claim on the building defect? Under what kind of a theory or remedy?
Well, traditionally, all the remedies for let me answer two ways. First of all, I want to talk about RCLA, because I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding about what RCLA is. RCLA is essentially a procedural and remedial overlay statute. It's sort of
could be similar to 4590I or to the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act. What it says is the legislature says all these kind of claims based on construction defects, we really want to keep out of the courts. We want them to be, we want there to be notice, we want there to be an opportunity to repair, and we want there to be incentives for settlement. And that's really what the statute is about. And frankly, since 1989, there have been very few reported cases under the statute, and we believe that's because it's working. It's getting homes fixed. It is a process, like the express warranties, a process for getting these kinds of disputes resolved without resort to litigation.
And if those things don't get fixed pursuant to a RCRA claim, what avenues does a homeowner have to pursue recovery from the builder? Can they still pursue a DTPA claim?
Yes. RCRA does not create a cause of action. You still plead your claims just like you would otherwise. You plead negligence, or you plead DTPA, or you plead breach of contract. And what RCRA does is it sets up a process and a procedure for notice, an opportunity to make offers of settlement, and then there are certain damage limitations actually in the statute. If certain conditions have been met, if the builder has made a reasonable offer and it's been unreasonably rejected, the legislature has said we're going to put some limits on the damages that a home buyer can recover. So I think it's a little bit, it's like looking at it with tunnel vision to say that this one thing is going to limit damages. There are a variety of both statutory and common law, and the second part of the answer to your question is that traditionally, the common law has funneled construction defect claims into breach of contract remedies. And even if they're pleaded as negligence claims, there's a case cited in our brief, the Jim Walter Homes case, that says basically, if your claim is you didn't get the home you bargained for, that's a breach of contract remedy type of claim.
Do we not have the complete contract in the record in this case?
You don't, Your Honor. What's in the record is in the special exceptions that were filed by Centex, there is a reproduction of the entire paragraph of the warranty waiver.
Is there a, can you tell us if there's a limitation in this contract on recovery of incidental and consequential damages for breach of the contract?
I don't know the answer to that in this particular contract. Just as
can you finish the answer to that question in the supplemental brief, please?
Yes, with the proviso that the contract is not in the record, but I will. Justice O'Neill, I don't feel like I gave you a very good answer to your question about Melody Home, and I'd like to come back to that and explain why it should be limited and distinguished. First of all, the legal assumptions on which that opinion was based have been eroded in subsequent decisions of this court. For example, the Melody Home court cited, can I finish my answer?
Yeah, I'd like to hear.
The Melody Home Court cited the DTPA non-waiver provision as grounds for prohibiting waiver of this new common law repair services warranty. In subsequent decisions of this court, including the Southwestern Bell case that's cited in our brief, this court has said that the DTPA non-waiver provision does not prohibit contractual waivers of implied warranties that arise from common law or from statutes other than the DTPA. You remember the Southwestern Bell case was a limitation on damages. So for the first reason to limit Melody Home is because the legal assumptions on which it was based have eroded.
But that, as to the policy questions, would you agree that the implied warranty does provide remedies that the homeowner does not have under other statutes?
No, I think it is not necessarily the case.
Well, what about faulty chimney? It was built, it's defective in the first place, but there were no misrepresentations. It doesn't come under any of the laundry list items of the DTPA. There are situations where a homeowner would be without a remedy but for the implied warranty, right?
There are situations that may be covered by the express warranty.
My understanding is if we go with your position, a home builder can say no warranties, period. So let's go with that.
That's true. That Robichaud says a consumer can knowingly waive all warranties.
All right, so let's take a situation where all warranties are waived. There are situations where a homeowner would be out a remedy under other common law or statutory provisions.
Possibly, but not probably. And the reason I say that is there are so many different protections for homebuyers. For example, there is an implied covenant in the contract that the home will comply with building codes. And there is a breach of contract action available. It's in a case cited in our brief, the TIPS case. There's a breach of contract action available based on that implied covenant.
Well, let's say the inspector comes in, inspects the chimney. It falls apart a week later because of some shoddy workmanship. That's not covered under the DTPA or any other cause of action. I think that's the concern that a lot of members of the court have expressed, is there a situation where the consumer would be without a remedy under these other causes of action?
Your Honor, it is very hard to imagine that situation given the practical realities of the home building industry today, with both the statutory protection and the presence of competition, where if one builder gives an express warranty, another builder is going to give that same express warranty or lose customers, and the presence of these federal government regulatory lenders who are also requiring express warranties. But that said, what we're talking about here is whether this court should jump in and rewrite a contract.
Well, I don't want to get into the argument piece again. I'm not sure I understood the answer to your question is yes or no. There could be situations, and I believe the answer is yes, but few.
I think that's true, and I think on this record there is absolutely no evidence that there are any facts about this case that would suggest that to be true. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments today. The motion will adjourn.